Our guest has provided us some terrific coverage all year long from his perch at ESPN 710 in Seattle. Online, 710sports.com. On Twitter, the handle is at the B Gustafson. Brandon Gustafson, welcome in. Always appreciate your time. So what's the mood among the Seahawk faithful these few days after?
Well, the pitchforks are out, let's just say that. They're not Seahawks faithful isn't too happy after that loss. And after watching it, it's really not hard to see why. Something that I kind of was writing about after the game, and we've talked about it on our station today and wrote about it a little bit more, and you've seen it on Twitter, is who's the most at fault for that game? And obviously the offense is, as a group, was the big issue. Despite the Rams putting up 30 points, the offense just couldn't get anything done. And now people are saying, well, is Russell Wilson the guy at quarterback? Do they need to fire their offensive coordinator? Is Pete Carroll washed up? all this stuff. So it's been an interesting 48 hours for sure.
An overreaction from fans on Twitter? No, you don't say. Brandon, you posted something I thought was spot on, and you mentioned Brian Schottenheimer, the offensive coordinator. You know, at times this season, the running game was decimated. The offensive line had a lot of new faces. Seemed like the tight end room had guys in and out. And sure, the game leaves a bad taste. But beyond the fans, what's the word from the team or Pete Carroll on Schottenheimer's status?
Yeah, it sounds like basically the entire coaching staff is going to be back for 2021, which something that's really interesting to me is, and you and I have talked about it too, at the beginning of the year, you know, this high-flying offense could not be contained, couldn't be stopped. They're throwing the ball all over the yard. And then on defense, they were historically bad, and it was like, okay, well, Shoddy might get some head coaching looks, and the Seahawks might fire Ken Norton Jr., the defensive coordinator, during the season. And now it's like, well, they're both going to be back. And while fans, they might not be super thrilled with the Norton news, but at least the second half of the year, we saw that defense really turned it around. But people didn't really take too kindly to Brian Schottenheimer, it being announced that he's almost for sure going to come back. But this was still a record-setting offense for the team. They scored the most points in franchise history. I think it was the most yards they've ever had, too. Russell Wilson set a new record for passing touchdowns in a single season. So I think you can understand why they would want to have that continuity and try to find some kind of balance between what they did at the start of the year with that high-flying passing attack and then the second half of the year where they tried to control the clock and ground and pound a little bit more. They need to find that kind of sweet spot medium.
You know, as for this game, and you noted it on Twitter, the running game obviously improved when Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde returned from injuries. It wasn't really consistent. They had more moments. So safe to say, while they showed the capability to run later in the season, opposing defenses did not really adjust because they weren't convinced. They just didn't run enough.
Yeah, these teams were playing two high safeties on the back end because of the threat of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and David Moore to go down the field. And Russell Wilson, when he's on, he's the best deep ball passer in the game. I don't think there's any question about that. So opposing defenses said, fine, we're going to play our two safeties back. We're going to play zone. We're going to play seven-man fronts with three linebackers, and we're going to have our four-man defensive front. And they were just daring the Seahawks to run the ball more. And for a Pete Carroll offense, it didn't happen as much, even though there was more of a point of emphasis to run the ball than there was at the beginning of the year. And that's when you saw the passing numbers started to go down. Wilson wasn't connecting with the big plays. And, you know, Saturday against the Rams was kind of the culmination of all of that. You know, Wilson completed 11 passes of 27 attempts. The two biggest plays were to Metcalf for deep touchdowns, and one of them was broken coverage earlier in the game, and the second one was in garbage time when they were down by 17 at that point, and it didn't really matter. He was sacked five times. There was no quick passing attack. Something that we'd kind of hoped to see was some more tempo, some more up pace, that stuff that they seem to run in the fourth quarter of games that works out really well. You didn't see much of any of that. So it was just this culmination of basically all the bad things that you saw in the second half of the year on full display. And the Rams have the number one defense in the league. And basically the Seahawks ran the same exact offense they ran in week 16. And had no adjustment for when the Rams countered them. It was pretty surprising.
You know, along those lines, fans, media, players, coaches are more about what they did or didn't do. And you mentioned the offensive struggles down the stretch, even in the win 2 weeks ago. In that game, it's not, they didn't even run for 100 yards or pass for 200. So safe to say, you also have to look at the matchup, because this LA defense kind of has their number. And it feels like if Aaron Donald has a GPS, Russell Wilson seems to be his destination.
Not just Aaron Donald, Leonard Floyd. I tweeted a stat earlier today. Leonard Floyd had 7 sacks of Russell Wilson in 3 games this year. That's unbelievable. And then Aaron Donald is the best football player on the planet and is just an absolute freak of nature. The way that the Seahawks want to operate with their passing attack, which is those deep play actions, those deep drops, looking for explosive plays downfield, when you have them running 2 high safeties and you have Jalen Ramsey, the best cover corner on the planet, taking away your best deep threat in DK Metcalf, and then you have a defensive front with Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd and Michael Brockers and all those guys coming right at you, yeah, you need to counter it, and they just didn't. You can't be sacked 5 times. You can't be sacked and have holding penalties and false starts like they did, to where at one point they were, I think it was 2nd and 35 or something like that. You can't win football games like that. And even if you are going to go with an attack that's more run heavy, control the clock, play good defense, you can't turn the ball over. And that pick 6 that Darius Williams picked off, that was the exact same. The Seahawks ran that same exact play in that same exact formation in week 16. And the Rams saw it. They said, hey, that play's coming. Darius Williams jumped it and he ran back the interception for a touchdown. The Rams scored 14 points off of 2 turnovers, including that pick 6, and they won by 10. And that's basically the tale of the tape.
I could do the math there, so we're covered. talking Seahawks with Brandon Gustafson of ESPN 710 in Seattle. On Saturday, you mentioned some of the important off-season decisions that are coming. And so a little speculation here. Chris Carson had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, then the injuries this year. And he's only 26. How important do you think it is he get re-signed and, come back healthy as their top gun in the backfield?
See, what makes that really interesting is that Rashad Penny's status is kind of uncertain. He was their 2018 first-round pick, the running back out of San Diego State, and he's flashed here and there, especially last year, and then even in his rookie season, and I think he has over 5 yards a carry when he gets the football, but he tore his ACL late last year, and then this year he wasn't quite healthy. He only played in 2 or 3 games, and then he missed the playoff game, but Carson, when he's healthy and when he's on, he's a top 10 running back. And Pete Carroll this morning said part of the thing that he wants to get better at next year is he wants to put more of an emphasis on running the football, especially because they had so many 3rd-and-long situations because they were getting sacked or there's like a holding penalty in the passing game and things like that. He wants to get back to running the football. And with Rashad Penny being such a question mark, he's a guy that you would have hoped could have assumed a starting role by now as a first-round pick, but with that being unclear, it almost seems like you kind of need Chris Carson to come back. I don't know what his market's going to be. Obviously, the cap space is going down. He's had some injury concerns over his career. He's never played a full 16 games, but like you said, he's a 2-time 1,000-yard rusher. He's a guy that's basically a borderline Pro Bowler every single year if he's healthy. So I would expect him back just based on Pete Carroll's comments today about wanting to run the football, but I'm not sure what exactly the Seahawks will be able to offer him versus what other teams will.
Yep, financial feasibility. One non-Seahawks issue. So the Eagles hadn't won an NFL title since I was born in 1960. They had 2 Super Bowl losses, and it was just 3 years ago that Doug Peterson won it. They were in the playoffs the last 2. It's been well documented from the demise of Carson Wentz, the injuries, and we were just talking about overreaction. A lot of people point to the dismal decision in the Giants game, but you're an NFL observer. What's your read on this?
I can't tell if it's a situation where the ownership and the GM are siding with Carson Wentz or what exactly it is. I saw one report that Doug Peterson was tired of being told what to do. If you're a head coach in the NFL, most of the time you're going to be told what to do from ownership or general manager. So that was kind of a surprising thing to see. But you mentioned it, the demise of Carson Wentz is astounding. And it's at a point now where it doesn't even seem possible that the Eagles can really move on from him in a trade. And if you release him, you're paying, I think, $30 million in dead cap or something like that in a season where, like we said, the cap is going to be going down. I'm not sure if they're going to bring in a coach that is going to be tied to Carson Wentz. Like, they have to basically tell ownership and GM, hey, you need to, you know, I'll play with this guy. And even though Jalen Hurts looked pretty good in those few games that we did see him, aside from that first half before he got pulled in week 17. But yeah, that's an interesting job. And as funny as it is, like you said, they won the Super Bowl 3 years ago and they won the NFC East last year. Some people are saying that of the seven head coaching jobs, that's probably the least appealing just due to that kind of quarterback issue. And because ownership and GM might make a head coach stick with Carson Wentz, I have no idea what they're going to do, but the NFC East, as we saw this year, is pretty wide open typically, so maybe the next head coach won't have to do too much in order to be successful in that division next year.
Yeah, dare I say, Carson failed and Peterson Wentz. A couple final thoughts for Brandon Gustafson, ESPN 710 in Seattle. That post-game reaction from the head coach to some of the players, would I be accurate in saying while they knew L.A. was tough and legit, they were home, they had won the West, that it seemed like most of the Seahawks kind of shell-shocked, like looking around like, wow, it's really over.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the biggest takeaways, was just how surprising they were to have lost. And a few players, and I think Carroll even mentioned as well, they thought that this was the best equipped roster that they've had to go to a Super Bowl since they went to that one in 2014. Veterans like KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson seemed to indicate, like, yeah, we had the guys to get there, we just didn't get it done. And that's pretty surprising. They have some spots on the roster where you can definitely see some room for improvement. I think interior offensive line is something, especially when you're going to be playing Aaron Donald twice a year. They gave up too many sacks. Russell Wilson was sacked, I think it was 47 times, which was the third most in the league this year. That's one spot. You could probably do an upgrade at cornerback. Shaquille Griffin's a free agent. Trey Flowers has been inconsistent. Quentin Dunbar, when he was healthy this year, even wasn't that great. So there's some spots they can still get better, but they were definitely surprised to have been a one and done, and I think this year's team was a lot better than last year's team, which did win a playoff game and ultimately come very, very close to upsetting the Green Bay Packers in Lambeau Field.
No, I agree with you on that one. And lastly, on your Twitter feed, you know, you mentioned some of the key off-season attention grabbers. There are important free agents. You mentioned the salary cap going down, plus the Jamal Adams trade cost them a first and a third. So more challenges than usual to not only try and keep your guys, but try and add pieces than usual?
Yeah, there's a lot of juggling that's to be done. Like we mentioned, Chris Carson, Shaquille Griffin, Quentin Dunbar are all free agents. The reason Jamal Adams wanted out of New York with the Jets, aside from that organization being terrible, was that they weren't giving him a new deal. And it was kind of surprising that the Seahawks and Adams didn't seem to be talking about that either during the season or beforehand, but this is the offseason to get it done. You really don't want to go into his last year without him having that deal. Quandre Diggs, who was also a Pro Bowl safety, he's in a similar boat. He's only got 1 year left on his deal. No first-round pick this year, no third-round pick this year, no first-round pick the following year. So adding to this roster is going to be really, really hard, and KJ Wright's a free agent as well. So you have all these key pieces. You have all these starters, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that are free agents or that you need to take care of. And you're going to have a lot less money to deal with. It's going to be really hard to keep this core group together, which Pete Carroll said is a big goal of his this offseason. So we're going to see how many guys they're able to bring back, how many guys from the outside they're able to add in, and whether they're going to be able to build off of a 12-4 NFC West winning year, which you'd think would have been seen as successful in most eyes, but after a one and done in the playoffs, you know, that's that. At the end of the day, that's what matters.
Well, at least it'll give us a bunch of stuff to keep an eye on and keep talking about on the radio and on your show and on your website and on Twitter. Brandon, it was awesome to get to meet you this year. I really appreciate all the awesome time you provided us, the insight, the laughs, the information. So like I said, as we move along and off-season moves happen, we'll talk some Seahawks. And then, of course, tick, 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 we'll also look forward to having you on to talk about Mariners and baseball.
Baseball. Love it.
pretty stoked about that. Again, folks, ESPN 10 in Seattle, online, 710sports.com on Twitter, the B. Gustafson. Brandon, seriously, thanks so much. You make such terrific additions to the show. We appreciate it. Be well, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate your time as always.
All right. Have a good one.